Next up is Inside Finance. Inside Finance is a special feature of this program every week where we discuss in depth the financial and economic challenges of our time and explore possible solutions. Here is your host this week, Stanford Simon.
For those of you listening, I'm talking to Mr. Timothy Entwined, who is the governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, and he's here in Grenada. So we're talking about the issues and where he is and what's happening. Corresponding back, the last question I asked him was a big issue. Governor, what are the prospects for Grenada and the ECCB? What is in the pipeline? What are some of the things that are happening that would help Grenada to develop?
Well, certainly in the near to medium term, that's 1 to 3 years, we see the economy is growing probably on average about 3% per annum. So that's an improvement from where we were a couple of years ago, but of course it's not where we want to be. We'd like to see our economies growing by at least 5% per year. We feel if that happens, we will see a reduction in unemployment and poverty, and we will be able to see a faster realization of, you know, our potential as a region and of course, speaking specifically Grenada as a country. Grenada has not done too badly. I mean, you look at what Grenada has done under the homegrown program, where the economy has grown. Last year, it grew by 5.2%. That's certainly impressive in the midst of a program. Many people did not anticipate that would happen, not the fund, even locally. And Grenada was able to surpass expectations there. The key for Grenada now, as we come to the end of the homegrown program, is to build on that platform, that fiscal stability platform. Make sure that we respect the financial responsibility legislation that was passed last year. Grenada is seen as a leader in the region where that is concerned, and other countries are looking at the Grenada model. So it's very important as a country that we maintain good financial fiscal decision making, we be fiscally responsible, and that we pivot now to increasingly building the real economy, which is the real sector, which is looking at our productive sectors of agriculture, tourism, manufacturing, education, obviously, we have to continue to look at, that's SGU, and construction, you know, those are the areas, and building them up so that they can grow even faster and create jobs. One of the issues when you do that is that you have to look at competitiveness. You have to look at competitiveness and productivity. You can't get away from that. That right. is part of how we'll grow these economies faster, how we move from 3% to 5%. So that's one area. The area of energy is an area, obviously, that has to be given a lot of attention, because energy, especially the adoption of renewables, has the potential to really help move our economies a lot faster and to build in a certain level of resilience in our economies. Resilience against some of the shocks that can occur if there are dramatic movements in the price of oil. At the moment, we're going through a very benign period where prices are relatively low, less than $50. That has helped us all, most of us, because if you speak to Trinidad and Suriname and Venezuela, that's hurt them really badly. But in our case, many of the oil importing countries, that has worked for us. It's very important when we get these BRICS that we use them in an appropriate way. That is to say that we reform in the sector to be more resilient or less reliant on oil, on fossil fuels. And that's why we have to make sure we're doing what we have to do with solar PV, wind, geothermal, among other renewables. That's very important for us. Long term, it will help to put the economies on a higher growth trajectory and be sustained. So energy is another area. What we do with small business. You know, when we talk about employment in our region, you can't ignore the fact that much of the employment comes from small business. And therefore, you have to make sure the environment is supportive, whether it's the tax regime, whether it's the business facilitation, whether it is the way that we support them in terms of incentives, training and so on, skills. And, you know, you tie skills back to the schools. And I don't want to get onto my pet peeve now about this obsession with subjects rather than skills. But part of the issue we have with unemployment in our region, especially amongst our youth, and I have to say this with care, but it is a dysfunction in our education system, where there's a disconnect between what is happening in the education system and the labor market. We're producing people with a lot of subjects, but not a lot of skills.
And that needs to change.
That needs to change, because then they come out and we're saying, well, they need jobs. Whereas if we make the adjustment in the education system and we pivot to skills, they'll come out with skills and they will create their own jobs or be prepared to take the jobs that are available. Because it will shock you to know that notwithstanding high unemployment, there are still skills gap which cannot be filled internally and have to be filled outside. You take marinas, for example, where there's a lot of possibilities there. And yet the reality is that many people still do not have the requisite skills to be able to service marinas. I mean, there's training going on now to bring people up to standard, but you'll be surprised that you still have to bring in a lot of expert skills in that area. So I'm just giving an example, just to illustrate the point that we have to do a better job of making our education system more responsive to the demands of the day, the skills that are required, rather than simply churning out people with 14, 15, 16 subjects and then saying, where are the jobs? That's a broken model, and that model needs to be revamped with urgency.
And that urgency need to come quickly.
Indeed.
Because if it don't, we have a bigger problem
indeed,
that we would face.
Exactly, because then you will see the emergence of social pathologies, whether it's crime, violence, among others. You'll see the dysfunction because people are frustrated with not seeing opportunities. So I think there has to be a rethink, not just in Grenada, frankly, around the region, because high youth unemployment is a major issue across the region.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, I'm speaking to Mr. Timothy Antoine, Permanent Secretary in the Ministry of Finance. Governor of the Eastern Caribbean.
You are forgiven. You said this for so long.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. Now, what I want to do, because I want to ask him two questions. One is looking at its function, because a lot of persons do not know what the ECCB bank really do. I want you to explain that a bit to us, and also talk to us about the strength of the EC dollar. Why is it that the dollar is so strong? And I guess people in the U.S. who don't know would have an appreciation of why it's so strong. So we take a break. I come right back and continue my discussion here with Mr. Timothy Antoine, who is governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. This is Inside Finance.
Come with your dream to the Grenada Development Bank, and we will find a way to finance it. Whether you want to start a business or refinance an existing project, whether you want a mortgage for house or land, or a loan for a vehicle, or your educational advancement, we have a special to finance your energy conservation overhaul for your home or office. They all come with the lowest interest rates. At the GDB, the People of Grenada Bank, we encourage ideas and we finance dreams. Come into us because the future is yours. The Grenada Development Bank. Empower, transform.
Welcome back. This is Inside Finance. I am Stanford Simon. With me in the studio is Mr. Timothy Antoine, Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. Governor, for many who are listening, the EC dollar have been pegged to the US dollar. Explain to us that. I've been since 1976.
So for the last 40 years, the Eastern Caribbean dollar has been pegged to the US dollar, where one US dollar is equal to 2.7 EC since 1976. So it's been 40 years. And a lot of people have asked why and how we've been able to achieve that. First of all, I think the reason why that was done back in 1976 is because there was a recognition then that the U.S. was one of our major trading partners, is our major trading partner. And therefore, it made sense for us in terms of trade for us to peg to the U.S. dollar as a major international reserve currency and recognizing that we were doing a lot of trading in U.S. dollars. Now, in setting up the currency union, the monetary union, the decision was made to ensure that our EC dollar is backed in foreign reserves. The law actually says that we need to be backed by at least 60%. Where are we right now?
we are 98%.
98%?
98%. So basically, for every one EC dollar in circulation, we have 98 cents in U.S. In foreign reserves, mainly U.S. dollars, U.S. Securities, to back that. So it's almost 100% backed. So that gives us our strength. That's why you know when you go into a bank with EC dollars, you can get U.S. That's why you can trade easily. It's freely convertible because, in fact, the foreign reserves are there to back the currency. So we talk about the backing ratio. So like I said, the backing is actually 98% at this moment. The law actually requires us to be at 60%.
So you're way above.
Way, way above. But by maintaining a strong dollar via the backing of the currency, we've been able to maintain stability in our currency for so long. So let me just explain. When I say backing, what we basically do is that we lend our money, U.S., to the U.S., for example. Because what happens is that we buy U.S. treasuries and U.S. securities, right?
What is U.S. treasury and what is U.S. security?
Treasury bills issued by the U.S. government. Or whether it is bonds issued by, or equities issued by the U.S. Firms and institutions. Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, just giving an example. Mm. Those are not specifics, but just to give an example. Mm. But they need to raise money for their capital expansion programs, say in the U.S. When we buy from them, what essentially has happened is that they've borrowed from us. Because if the U.S. government wants to raise $1 billion, you know, it has a big deficit. It has to raise a lot of money. What it does is it issues treasury bills and bonds, debentures. That is effectively borrowing from the rest of the world. So what happens is that they give us a treasury bill, for example. We give them U.S. dollars.
But couldn't they just print the dollar? Couldn't they just print it?
They print it in a way by borrowing. When we talk about printing money in the central bank, essentially they simply borrow. That's essentially what we do. Whenever you hear central bank is printing money, what they really mean is that they're borrowing. Either they're facilitating the government's borrowing or they're borrowing. Because you can't print money indefinitely if you do not have a backing. That's why the backing of the EC dollar is so important. So some people say, well, why doesn't the central bank just print money? Well, if you have no value, if you have no backing, if you have no reserves to back it, it's meaningless. It's paper with no value. And sooner or later, that will be recognized and it will be not worth anything. The value of the EC dollar comes not from the fact that we issue the dollar and it's a nice, crisp dollar. The value comes from the fact that we are, the foreign reserves are there to back that dollar. So when a question is asked, there are reserves.
So that is what makes the EC dollar strong.
That is what makes the EC dollar strong. That is what makes it. If you print money, some countries have tried that. What you have after a while is inflation. Hyperinflation. You know, in some countries, you hear about inflation at 100%.
Yeah, like, like Zimbabwe.
Exactly. Exactly. You can't print money if there's no value. Let me try to break this down further. If you're not producing anything, yes, then you're borrowing money. How are you going to pay back for it? Just think about this. If you're borrowing money, and you're not producing anything, which is your income.
To sell to
exactly, get. Exactly. How are you going to pay for it? So you may borrow initially, but then you're going to have a problem. Because you won't have the capacity to repay.
Then inflation.
Exactly. So you'll have a lot of money. What we call in economics, too much money chasing too few goods. That leads to inflation, a rise in the price level. That is not sustainable. And then you get heartache and grief such as we're seeing in some countries not so far away from us. And in other parts of the world. So at the end of the day, central banks cannot be responsible and print money. And one of the reasons why the EC dollar has been so strong for so long is because the EC dollar, the central bank does not print money. Well, very little printing of money.
Well, let me ask this question.
In other words, we don't simply lend money to governments willy-nilly and carelessly.
Okay.
We have a limit on how much we can lend, and there's a very particular reason why we do that, to ensure that the EC dollar is protected. If we lend them willy-nilly, the EC dollar value will fall.
Will fall.
And we don't want that, which is why we're very, very careful with that.
So when we see new money, you see new money come out.
Yes.
You print new money. Is that you get rid of the old one? How would that work?
So there's a necessity from time to time to replace old notes with new notes. The wear and tear, after a while, means that they get mutilated. And after a while, when you go to a financial, well, you go to an institution, a business, they refuse to take them.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say, well, the bank is not going to accept that. It's defaced. It's torn. It's dirty. So, because money keeps changing hands, it keeps changing hands.
Right.
So there's wear and tear. Like a vehicle, like even the human body, there's wear and tear. So the central bank, as the issuer of currency, is obligated, is required from time to time to make sure that we replace old with new. Okay?
So it's just an exchange then?
So that's an exchange of old with new. Now, that does not mean you may not have additional expansion in the money supply. You can have that if, in fact, there's production to back supply. That's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have a very key role to make sure that you continually update the money supply, the currency, those in stock, and coins with, you know, clean, good money and so on. So that's a role. So what will happen is that you take it into the bank then exchanges it with the central bank.
Okay.
So the bank, so let's say a central bank, say I have $100 of old $5, they're torn, they're mutilated, and then we're going to replace that with a new stock of $105.
So you take the old ones.
Right, and you place it with the new.
With the new one. It's not that you print new money.
So you haven't printed new money. All right. Now, the central bank, as people bring foreign currency, so that's one thing that we do.
Mm-hmm.
As people bring foreign currency to the central bank, for example, the banks, the governments get a loan from somewhere, or they get a grant from somewhere. That comes into the system as foreign currency. It then goes to the banking system. The banks then will come to the central bank with foreign currency and say, we want local currency.
Okay.
Because a lot of what the bank is doing, the bank is giving a loan. When you borrow from the bank and you make a loan,
it's local.
Typically, unless you ask for a foreign currency loan, it's a local loan. Then you're going to get a check or you're going to get cash in local currency. So what the central bank does, it takes the foreign currency that comes in. That's how we build up the reserves. We take the foreign currency that's coming in and we replace it with local currency. Okay? All the time, making sure that the local currency we issue is properly backed by foreign reserves. So we are monitoring on a daily basis the backing of the currency. Making sure there is not a situation where we issue local currency if it is not backed by foreign. And how do you get foreign reserves? You get it from a number of sources. Either you produce it, tourism, agriculture, that's foreign exchange earnings. You get grants, you borrow, remittances. Those are perhaps the four principal ways that foreign currency comes into the country. And then, of course, you can then convert that into local currency. But you got to make sure that that balance between, well, the backing of the local currency in circulation meets at least 60%. And, of course, in the central bank, we're talking in the 90s. We don't even think about 60%. So that gives us strength. That gives the dollar muscle. That gives the dollar sustainability over a long period of time, such that there's confidence that people know when I go to the bank, I can get U.S. for my EC. If I have EC, I can get U.S.
Because the central bank is...
We have the reserves.
The reserve.
We have the reserves.
And that is what holds the EC.
There's no question in anybody's mind about the ability to give you foreign reserves. You contrast that with some countries that you go in, where you're traveling and you need to get permission and get currency.
Currency you have to write to get it.
Exactly. You may need to use your credit card, and even that, you may have an issue where you could only get a certain amount and no more. We have no such issues in the currency union. I mean, because of the stability and strength of a dollar, once you have the EC, you'll get a U.S.
We're okay. The other question is that the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank is in control of a number of islands in the Eastern Caribbean. One, could you tell us the islands? And secondly, why is it the way that it is? Meaning, all these islands' finances is controlled and managed by this central bank. Could you explain to us why?
Okay, so the currency union, we have eight countries or eight territories, because six independent countries and two non-independent. We have Anguilla and Montserrat, which are the non-dependent, the British dependent territories, as overseas territories, as they're referred to. And then there's Antigua and Barbuda, Dominica, Grenada, St. Kitts, St. Lucia, St. Vincent. I think I covered everybody.
And Grenada.
And Grenada. That's it. So that's it. And so the central bank in law is responsible for the issuance of currency in all eight countries by law. That's in the ECCB agreement of 1983 by law. And of course, the central bank is also responsible by law, the Banking Act, the latest one being the one that was passed in 2015 for regulating all commercial banks and entities named under the Banking Act in these eight territories. The reason why we're together is based on historical circumstances. I mean, you would have to go back to a period of time when, as British colonies, we were part of the British Caribbean Currency Board. Back in 1950, for example, when that would have included Barbados, Trinidad and Tobago, Guyana, I believe, probably Jamaica, the BCCB. And in those days, there was no central bank, so notes and coins were actually issued by commercial banks like Barclays and I think Scotia, and the British government, I think, did some. Things have changed dramatically. And then that evolved from 1950. Then in 1965, we had the Eastern Caribbean Currency Authority, which included Barbados and many of the countries in the Eastern Caribbean. What happened is that as countries began to get their independence, Trinidad and Tobago and Jamaica, I believe in 1962, they, of course, moved to form their own central banks and their own currency. And then later on, of course, Barbados did similarly. Barbados, having attained independence in 66, I think Barbados would have formed its central bank around 1972, I believe it was. So that meant that with Barbados leaving to go on its own, with its own central bank, its own dollar, we were left with just the Eastern Caribbean, the rest of the Eastern Caribbean. So that the Eastern Caribbean Currency Authority, ECA, then moved from Barbados, because the BCCB, the British Caribbean Currency Board, I think was based in Trinidad and Tobago. Then the ECA was based in Barbados. And then once Barbados went independent, got independence and moved to have its own central bank, 1972, thereabouts, then we moved. Obviously, there was no point in staying in Barbados. So the Eastern Caribbean Currency Authority then moved to St. Kitts in 1973, I believe it was, 73, 74. And it was only in 1983 that we became a formal central bank. The Eastern Caribbean Central Bank was established in, I believe, October 1983. Of course, that though means, you know, we are a full-fledged central bank with all the powers of the central bank, not just to issue notes and coins, currency, but also it can lend to banks and governments in within prescribed limits, and we're very careful about that. And it can do a couple other things as well with policy, monetary policy, and so on. So that's how we've evolved, and that's how these countries are together and have stayed together. And basically, just to round up on that little history, the way we're set up as a monetary union is that if we have to change the value of our dollar, which has been pegged, as I said at the beginning earlier, 1 to 2.7, 1 US dollar is 2.7, one US dollar is 2.7 EC. If we have to change that parity, then all eight must agree.
Wow.
All eight. Similarly, if we have to change the backing, the law right now says it's 60%. If we want to move that to anything else, all eight must also agree.
So it can't be six agreeing.
No, we all have to agree. when it comes to the backing and the and of the currency and the strength of the currency, there has to be unanimity, which means the unanimity principle means everybody has to agree. It can't be a split vote.
That's very high.
Vote. Yes, because we really have to come to consensus that this is what we really want to do for everybody. It's a very high bar. Very, very high bar. So so that it's not like constitutional reform. It's not two-thirds. It's 100%. Everybody. And even for constitutional reform, that's a high, two-thirds is a high bar, right?
Yes.
Well, for our currency, it's 100%. Mm. Everybody has to agree. So that has obviously, you know, worked for us over time. It's protected us. It means that if we're going to make any adjustment, it has to be very deliberate, and it has to be, there has to be consensus among all eight of the members. So those are some of the provisions and protections within our monetary union, which have served us well for a very long time. And it behooves us to maintain that while looking at the future and making sure our central bank is positioned to respond to the challenges of the day. So we must preserve that while building and going forward with the new challenges. So that's what we're all about. So essentially, I think you would ask me what the central bank does. It issues currency, no cent coins. We don't produce them ourselves. We use providers in Canada and the UK to do that. Canada for coins, the UK for notes. We have firms there that do that for us. We issue currency. We regulate and supervise banks and regulated entities. That's a very important function, financial stability. We also give advice to our governments on a range of issues. We provide credit in limited terms if required to governments or commercial banks. Limited terms. Because really, the central bank is the lender of last resort. So you don't... The governments, when they want to borrow, they go to the RGSM or they go to the World Bank or the CDB or even the commercial banks. So central bank is really last resort borrowing.
When they cannot, are they having problems and serious, the central bank would come in to
Right. And then, and then we provide certain services to our governments. For example, when our governments are paying their debts and paying the external things, they do it through the central bank. So
they do not pay that directly to the institution.
No, it's more efficient for them to do it through us. It's more efficient for them to receive their foreign currency through us and to pay out through us. Because we have access to the global system, the payment system. So if Grenada, for example, is paying the Caribbean Development Bank, Grenada will direct or instruct the central bank, having put money there in the central bank, in an operating account, to then pay to the Caribbean Development Bank, whatever the amount, 5 million EC, 5 million US, whatever the amount is, and so on. So that's one of the things that we do. Similarly, when government is receiving a lot of grants and even loans, they will channel it through the central bank because the central bank gives the best rates, and also, you know, it's efficient for us in terms of managing foreign currency. We do practical things. Yes. The payment system, making sure when you exchange checks, banks to banks, the central bank provides a clearing house mechanism that allows banks to be able to, you know, you write a bank, let's say Scotia, write into Republic, making sure the transfer takes place, money moves. There's a clearinghouse mechanism that is facilitated by
the central bank.
Yes, because payment systems is part of our responsibility as well. So there's a lot that we do. A lot that we do.
I'm realizing that because we didn't know all the stuff you do.
I've just scratched the surface.
Wow.
You know, there's so much more, which is why ETCB Connects is important for us, because for us as a region, because what we hope to do there is to layer by layer strip, reveal the inner workings of the central bank.
Which is critical.
Yes. And as people better understand what we do and why we do it, then I think it makes for a stronger currency union. I think it makes for a better citizenry. I think it makes for better decision making. When I call for fiscal responsibility, and I know that's not our subject today, but what I'm calling for is not just for governments to be fiscally prudent for their sakes, but I'm also looking at long-term about the currency and making sure that we continue to have a strong dollar. I'm calling for that because we recognize that you want governments to have flexibility. When things are down, they should be able to spend more. When things are up, they should be able to spend less. To do that, you have to be fiscally responsible. You have to run a proper fiscal program, right? So that you have resilience to deal with shocks. There's very good reasoning for that. The advice we give in there is predicated on practical personal experience in Grenada and elsewhere, World Bank and other places, but also what I see now regionally as governor of the central bank.
Mm. In conclusion, a lighter note, how is Mike Sylvester doing?
Great. Mike is doing very well. I think he's hit his straps. You know, I feel confident when that Mike would succeed me, and I have expectation that he will do even better than I did. I have a lot of confidence in our team in the Ministry of Finance. I know the men and women in the Ministry of Finance. And so Mike has stepped up, as has Kim, who is the Deputy PS. There's Pauline Peters, and the rest of the team. And I'm really pleased. These are people I've seen grow. These are people who have toiled with me in the trenches. These are a lot of people who have a lot of respect and regard for. These are people I love. The bonds that we have cannot be broken. You see, they were forged during times of adversity, in very difficult times and days. One never forgets that.
No.
So Mike is doing great.
That's good.
And they just started their budget, and I'm keeping a close eye, simply from the point of view of ensuring that they continue to do what they're supposed to be doing. That's my role now. So while I've stepped back and stepped out to take on this responsibility, I continue to look at Grenada's fiscal performance, as I do of all the countries in the currency union. But certainly for Grenada, it's important that we respect the fiscal responsibility legislation, because it will help us. It really will. It really will. And I'm confident that that will happen.
Well, I'm happy that you're keeping an eye on us to just ensure that we keep in line and intact, and that is helpful.
Indeed.
If you want to leave some thoughts with us as you conclude?
Well, just to say it's been great chatting with you. I thought this was supposed to be a 15-20 minute interview. I'm sure it's a lot longer than that. But I'm happy to share. I mean, I see that as part of my responsibility. Even though I'm on vacation, it's for me just being accountable, explaining things. That's part of what I do and what I'm supposed to do. So I will continue to do that. We will continue to do that as a bank. I want to say to our social partners, I want to just greet all the social partners in Grenada. I have a lot of regard for our partners. We work together. What we've achieved in Grenada, our social partners have a lot to do with, and they are men and women who I respect. They're patriotic citizens. We didn't always agree. We did not always agree. But I had no doubt in my mind about their patriotism. None. Even when we disagreed on policy issues. But we did work together, and we got good results. So I greet all the social partners, the churches, the business community, civil society, NGOs, labor, all of them. I don't want to call them my name, but they know who they are. I have high regard for them. And then, of course, the church community, thanks for your prayers. I feel and continue to feel those prayers. I thank you for that. And then, of course, including St. George's Baptist Church, and your good self, and of course my fellow citizens, whose love and support I continue to feel. And as a man of faith, you know, I just want to say that put God first, because I truly believe, Pastor Simon, when we put God first, He puts our lives in order. He puts our lives in order.
So true.
As the Bible says, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. And does not mean we won't have challenges and we won't have our heartaches and so on, but He's guiding us, and His purpose and destiny for us are being fulfilled, and that's the best thing for us to be. That's the best place for us to be. So I want to encourage us as a nation. The Bible says righteousness exalts a nation, since the reproach to any people. I want us to, I mean, I don't hide the fact that I'm a man of faith. I say in the central bank, we will use all the tools at our disposal. The spiritual tools, or faith tools, or intellectual tools, everything in the toolbox. God has given them all to us. And every good and perfect gift comes from above. So I thank Grenadians, and indeed our citizens across the currency union, for their support, the prayers, and the partnership.
How are you and the Prime Minister doing?
Great. I have a very good relationship with all of the Prime Ministers. Obviously, I work very closely with Prime Minister Mitchell, so that relationship, we have a strong working relationship that continues. But I had before I went, and of course I've built even stronger working relationships with all of the Prime Ministers, heads of government across the region. As a trusted advisor, I do my best to give them good advice, speaking truth to power always, with respect, but being fearless in that regard. And so far, they have been responding very, very well, and I think we've been moving forward in a way that will help, and is helping our region. So I'm grateful for that as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you spend this time with us. Oh, you sat here. Oh,
could you believe that? But thank you, because you made it your time as well. You made yourself available, and I'm thankful to you, Pastor Simon, as well.
Yeah,
and thanks for what you do.
Thank you. It's just such a joy to sit and chat with you. It's so easy to talk with you.
I think that's the problem. When I sit and chat with you, we go on and on forever. But God be
but
praised.
The good thing is, because the information we share, I think, is what people need to know and need to honor. Because even for me myself, I learned so much about the central bank, which before I never knew. And I'm sure the question I'm asking, persons who are listening are asking the same question. The podcast, if folks want to get it, where do they go to get it?
So the easiest way is to go to YouTube, and you just put in ECCB Connects. ECCB Connects. That's it. And all the programs will come up.
All the programs will come up.
You can also go to our website. But the easiest way is just YouTube ECCB Connects.
YouTube ECCB Connects.
Yes.
That's it, and you find it. Okay, folks, I'm Pastor Stanford Simon, speaking there with the Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank, Mr. Timothy Antwine. I'm grateful for the opportunity. He's here on vacation, but he still finds the time to come to talk to us as we started Inside Finance together, and he hasn't forgotten us. As a matter of fact, he said he have taken the idea and have expanded it within the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. And I wish you all the best. God's blessings, His grace and peace go with you and your family, and know that we continue to pray for you. And we miss you, and we want you to do your best, and we will be here for you.
Thank you. God bless you all.
All right, folks, this is it. Take care of yourself. Send me an email, stanfordsimon01@gmail.com. You have been listening to a program of Inside Finance with Mr. Timothy Antwine, who is Governor of the Eastern Caribbean Central Bank. Have a great week. Join me here next week at the same time. We do it all over again right here on this station. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to another edition of Inside Finance, a program that explores the financial and economic challenges of our time. Join us next week for another edition.